Rhonda Foster with Urbana Fire Department spray paints shapes on damaged buildings to indicate the level of risk. Urbana's fire department is one of many from East Central Illinois at the scene. As Foster surveys the damage, she says she looks for
stability of roofs, of sidewalls, to see if we have any shifting, any structural damage. That's what tells us whether it's okay to go in or not.
Emergency management officials say 20 homes were completely destroyed and dozens badly damaged. This covered at least 10 square blocks, primarily on the north side of town.
I'm walking through Gifford. Some streets were left unscathed by the powerful storm, while others are completely devastated. Homes destroyed, windows blown out. And there's a community here that's left wondering, what's next?
Judith Singh moved to Gifford 2 months ago. She was at home with her six children when she came eye to eye with the storm. Her house is destroyed.
The tornado came through our house. It was just black, dark. It sounded like a train. I heard that before I saw it all.
Amazingly, Judith only sustained some cuts and scrapes on her back. Her children weren't injured. Judith's daughter, Autumn, says this could have been much worse.
The only thing that was going through my mind was my mother, my brothers and sisters. I didn't care about the TVs. I didn't care about really the house. My mind was on them.
Judith and Autumn sit outside of St. Paul's Evangelical Lutheran Church, waiting for a ride to a friend's house.
Where do I go from here?
Yeah.
What do I do from here? We lost everything.
Judith stares at a few boxes of clothing. It's all she could salvage from her home.
Yeah. I'm trying very hard not to be angry. I know it sounds wrong, but we've lost everything. I'm grateful to God that my kids are okay. But I'm stuck.
19-year-old Shayla Renz Watts helps clear debris from a home destroyed by the storm.
I've never seen anything like this before.
Watts is one of about a dozen cadets there from Lincoln's Challenge Academy, a program run by the Illinois National Guard to help at-risk youth. Watts says his captain's home was destroyed by the storm.
The day we heard that, I already immediately wanted to come out here and help him when I didn't even know it was going to be this bad.
Watts' career counselor, Larry Goff, says he thinks coming out here means a lot to the young men he's trying to help.
Part of their program and their service with us is they have to do service to community hours. Even though they've got their required hours in already, they're wanting to come up and help these people.
The Lincoln's Challenge cadets were asked to stop and take a lunch break. They said, no, we'll continue working. They were then offered a hamburger. One of them paused and looked up and said, no, give that to someone who needs it. Reporting in Gifford, I'm Sean Powers, Illinois Public Media.
Several of the students this week at Gifford all pitched in and did something. They helped out, right? They helped out, all right? So actions speak louder than words, okay?
Third grade teacher Sandy Behrens begins her class discussing the storm. Behrens asks her students what they're thankful for. One student says surviving the tornado. Another student says he's thankful the tornado didn't hit at night when he was in bed. And another says she's thankful that all of her family and friends survived. Behrens says they are all lucky.
Can you be replaced?
No.
You can't be replaced. Right, we can replace those. Now, do we miss those things?
Yes.
Yeah, we miss those things. But you know what? The fact that you're here and I'm here, that's a good thing.
And we're trying to reach Jim Gilliland. He was the mayor when Ogden was struck by a pretty bad tornado in April of 1996. I was not here at WILL in 1996, but the WILL newsroom was certainly here. And we're going to, let's just as sort of a prelude before we get to Mr. Gilliland, play a news report that aired on WILL in April of 1996. This is Sarah Day reporting for our station when Governor Jim Edgar visited the tornado-hit town of Ogden.
Governor Edgar toured Ogden yesterday, viewing the excessive damage done by last Friday's tornado. Along the way, he spoke to residents, including Jack Hall, whose North Street house was almost totally demolished.
You were able to save anything?
I'm going through valuables, papers, clothing. I was able to salvage most of the clothes. Most of the furnishing, I'm not sure how that's going to turn out yet, but...
Well, good luck. We'll try to get some help for you.
Thank you.
Okay.
The federal disaster declaration makes tornado victims in Champaign and Macon counties eligible for grants and loans to rebuild. Edgar also presented an American flag and dedicated a new flagpole in Ogden. Mayor Jim Gilliland called the flag a sign of hope.
That's what the flagpole is for, to show you that we can rise out of the ashes.
More than 1,000 homes and businesses in the two counties were damaged or destroyed by tornadoes. I'm Sarah Day.
And that's a report by Sarah Day, not of the most recent tornado damage in Gifford, but of tornado damage 18 years ago in 1996 in Ogden. And you heard the voice of then Mayor of Ogden, Jim Gilliland. And we have him here on the phone today. Mr. Gilliland, welcome to Focus.
Well, thank you for having me.
I don't know if we were able to hear that news report and hear your voice from 18 years back. And
yes,
what,
I was.
What sort of memories it brought back to you? April 19th, 1996. You're the mayor of Ogden. Where were you when this tornado hit?
We were, believe it or not, we were at home, and I was out on the porch watching the storm roll in, and you could see the darkness in the background as we had lightning flash across the sky, and the wind was blowing, and then all of a sudden, the wind just stopped, and everything got dead quiet, and we decided it was time to get in and get into the bathtub, and that's what we did, and then the wind picked up, and you could hear the debris hitting the side of our house.
You got in the bathtub for protection, I take it.
Yes, correct. We got in there with my wife and our new puppy and I, and we covered ourselves up and just prayed that we were right or out.
Okay. And the storm, did the storm come to your house or near it? What? How close did it get?
Well, we're on the northwest corner of town, and we were kind of on the edge of it, so we were very fortunate and blessed that we didn't have hardly any damage whatsoever to our home. So, which was really important later on as we worked in the recovery. And the storm was more south of us going, and it took a direction right through the middle of town.
Was there much of a warning? I mean, first of all, had you had any warnings about the weather that this might produce tornadoes?
Yes, we had been following the television broadcasts of the weather reports most of that evening. So we knew something was coming, and we didn't know the severity that it was going to end up being. But, yes, we were aware that it was coming, and so we had the storm spotters were out watching on the edge of town, which was part of our protection.
Did the siren go off in Ogden?
Well, at that time, we had a siren that had to be manually turned on, and unfortunately, by the time the gentleman got there to do that, the storm hit, and the siren and the building that the siren was on top of came tumbling down. Fortunately, he was not hurt, but we did not have a siren warning at that time, and since then, the village trustees and mayor we've got two new sirens up now, and they are automatically set off from the county, I believe, so we have a much better warning system today.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how broad the warning was last Sunday if the sirens went off in Ogden this past weekend because of that storm.
I don't remember hearing them. I don't remember hearing them. No, I don't believe they did in Ogden.
So you were hiding out. How long did it take for you to feel that everything was clear, that you could come out?
Well, once the sound of the freight train left, and then you quit hearing the debris hit the side of the house, it was kind of maybe the worst has passed. So that's when we got out and went outside on our front porch and looked around just from our front porch, the neighborhood that we could see.
Joy's pension overhaul is now a pen stroke away from becoming law.
On that question, there are 30 voting aye, 24 voting nay, 3 voting present. And the Senate does adopt Conference Committee Report Number 1 on Senate Bill 1. The bill, having received the required constitutional majority, is declared passed.
The Illinois General Assembly this afternoon approved sweeping changes to pensions for state employees and retirees. Governor Pat Quinn says he'll sign legislation into law. As Brian Mackey reports, it's intended to fix the most underfunded state retirement system in the country.
Illinois is roughly $100 billion short of the money it promised to pay state employees, university workers, and public school teachers. After years of debate, lawmakers finally agreed on a solution to the problem, cutting benefits, mainly by reducing the 3% annual increase retirees have gotten on their pensions. House Speaker Michael Madigan was unusually forceful in kicking off nearly 3 hours of debate.
This is not a one-sided bill. There will be changes here. Much needed changes. But this bill is a well thought out, well balanced bill.
Labor unions disagree, calling it a dark day for police, teachers, and other government workers. They say they'll challenge the legislation in court. The Illinois Constitution says government pensions cannot be diminished. I'm Brian Mackey.
And a University of Illinois faculty member says the school could provide a supplemental package to make up for a loss in pension benefits. Education professor Nick Berbulis says there have been active conversations with administrators. While details need to be worked out, he says the U of I could be looking at a program in which the university matched employee contributions. Berbulis says without it, fellow faculty, particularly younger instructors, may consider offers from other schools.
I think that there will be faculty who have outside opportunities who will be perhaps at the tipping point of deciding whether to stay or go. And I think that the current post-state plan can't be the only option available to people. That won't be competitive in terms of what people can get at other places.
U of I spokesman Tom Hardy confirms administrators are looking into a kind of supplemental program for all three campuses as a potential response to the pension overhaul. As always, you can find more news online at will.illinois.edu.
Ebert passed away Thursday at the age of 70. He had battled cancer for years, and jaw surgery in 2006 left him unable to speak. Dave Reed worked with Ebert at the University of Illinois' Daily Illini in the early 60s and during the critics' early days at the Chicago Sun-Times. Ebert was editor-in-chief of the DI when learning of President John F. Kennedy's death. Reed says his colleague took charge as a journalist should.
As soon as you heard the news, you headed for the newspaper because you knew there was a job to be done. And, of course, Ebert was there and directed that effort. And in the middle of, you know, overseeing all that we were doing, he also wrote a couple of great editorial and a column. I thought they were just fabulous in the middle of everything else.
While he was a student at Urbana High School, the Pulitzer Prize-winning Ebert covered sports for the Champaign News-Gazette. Ebert's widow, Chaz Ebert, issued a statement saying he had been preparing to enter hospice care. She says the world had lost a visionary and a creative and generous spirit who touched so many people all over the world. I'm Jeff Bosser, Illinois Public Media.
Roger Ebert passed away yesterday. It's a great loss for movie lovers everywhere, and it's being felt especially hard in Chicago. He was a staple of the critics' community there. Even after he became hobbled by cancer, Ebert still showed up several times a week to see movies in the screening rooms across the city. He would sit in the back row on the aisle next to the door. Scott Tobias is the film editor at the AV Club. He says that critics are returning to the screening rooms today, but that it's never going to be the same.
You know, when people become famous, you know, they maybe they're going to be sort of standoffish, but that was not his thing. He was very social. One of my favorite things he'd do before he lost his voice, he would sit in the back corner in his seat in the screening room before screenings and just hold court, you know, tell a lot of dirty jokes and just, you know, and he had this incredible laugh. I mean, just one of the all time great laughs. And you know, it was very sad when his voice went away. But at the same time, I mean, that I just felt like that made him into something else in a way. You know, when he went through cancer, when he lost his voice, I just felt he was almost reborn into somebody who was all the more inspiring. I mean, this is an industry that just keeps contracting. People just keep losing their jobs. It's not, you know, those have jobs, they don't pay very well. And yet he was still there. He just kept staying in the picture. You know, he kept writing at an unbelievable pace. It's a real inspiration to all of us of what it was and it is.
What's interesting is that if we look back on Ebert's career, especially as like a TV critic, he opened the doors for a lot of people. It really feels like he did something that was really important in his era, which was we didn't have the internet to disseminate all this information to people. And at the time, it was important to have somebody who was up there, who was very public, saying, hey, guys, there are all these smaller movies. Hopefully they'll open near you soon. It's important that you see these when they come out.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, the fact is, not all of us live in New York City. You know, we don't have access to these things. Speaking for myself, you know, I grew up, you know, in suburban Toledo and suburban Atlanta. I would not have been aware of so many films that they were championing on that show. You know, people called him often and rightly the most powerful critic there was, but he used those powers for good. You know, he often used those powers to champion films that needed the help. As a young person growing up, you know, in the 80s, I mean, every Christmas I'd get a copy of his movie Home Companion guide, which had all of his reviews in it. And this is, again, pre-internet. I didn't have access to any of these reviews until I got that book, and it was just incredible. I mean, you get the book, and you try to seek out everything he gave 4 stars to, and you'd have little arguments in your head with him. You know, I mean, you'd really start that conversation, and, you know, that's a huge impact. I mean, that's affecting, you know, millions of people.
It seemed like he was pretty future-looking, too. I mean, he really respected the tradition of film criticism, but he was always trying to come up with new ways to do it, you know, by the web or through TV when he was trying to relaunch his show.
Yeah, I think he certainly saw it as a global concern. He had and has his far-flung correspondence, which is a collection of bloggers from around the world who contribute to his site. You know, and he just took very passionately to the web, to blogging, to Twitter, to sort of finding and championing, you know, young voices that were completely untested often. I mean, you know, that didn't even really have a publication. I think he welcomed, you know, as many voices, you know, into that conversation as possible. And I think that was pretty forward thinking on his part.
2 weeks ago today, the entertainment industry lost a giant in film criticism, and to many in Champaign-Urbana, Chicago, and many other places around the country, a dear friend. Urbana native and University of Illinois graduate Roger Ebert, who had battled cancer for several years, passed away at the age of 70. This week, his 15th annual film festival carries on in Champaign for the first time without him. I'm Jeff Bossert. This morning on Focus, we'll spend an hour honoring Ebert's legacy. We'll be joined by Chicago Tribune critic Michael Phillips, one of those who took over on TV's At the Movies when Ebert's health declined. We'll also hear from some of Roger's friends from his days growing up in Champaign-Urbana, and we'll hear a bit from Chaz Ebert, as his wife spoke from the podium last night at the Virginia Theater as Ebert Fest got underway.
I was hoping that, you know, I always called Roger my boyfriend. I was hoping that my boyfriend would be here with me, and he's not, so I wore his scarf tonight. I'm going to, you know, I can be a loose cannon sometimes, so I'm going to stick more closely to the script, because I don't know where I would go if I didn't tonight. Well, I'm going to deviate from it for just a second. Because I just want to say thank you. The 15 years of this film festival have been so meaningful to me and to Roger. You gave Roger so much joy coming here year after year to the festival at his alma mater in his hometown. It made him so happy. And he wanted to make sure that the festival continues. And so we'll see what we can do about that. But tonight, this week, for the next 5 days, we're going to celebrate Roger.
Just look around here, and then what it says is that explore your health coverage options. When you click on See Your Options, it'll ask you a few questions.
The Champaign-Urbana Public Health District's Oase Vade helps people navigate through Illinois' new health insurance marketplace, getcoveredillinois.gov. A handful of public health staffers are on hand to assist people, like Champaign resident Cheryl Jones, who woke up early to get signed up.
I got up at 5:17 is when I, and it was hard for me to get out of bed because I had problems with my knees and my back.
Jones worked as a line operator at a factory before retiring last year. She says she got hurt on the job and is still...
I have problems with my hip, my shoulder. I just have a lot of problems now, you know. And not having any insurance, you know, you have to really just sit and suffer and wait it out, you know. And I'm between a rock and a hard place because I'm not old enough for Medicare. I got to wait till next year.
Charlene Allmiller lives just outside of St. Joseph. She says she doesn't have health coverage either and has been paying out of pocket for her antidepressant medication.
It's going to be a lot less stressful where I don't have to worry about having to pay a whole lot of money to go see the doctor.
The public health district's Oase Vade says the online marketplace appears to be running smoothly, with the exception of a few problems.
If you're on the marketplace, they have some technical glitches where it's not displaying all the information correctly right now. It's also taking a longer time because it seems like a lot of people are trying to access this website, so it is asking them to wait.
Coverage is scheduled to start January 1st, and open enrollment for the Affordable Care Act ends March 31st. I'm Sean Powers, Illinois Public Media.
We wanted to make sure that our plans were as competitive as possible in the exchange. You know, we are a health insurance company that's founded on managed care, and so we believe that we need to take care of their care either through disease management programs and things like that. So the bulk of our, all of our plans would actually be network, provider network driven, and they would have a managed care component so that that person has the ability to get to a case manager should they need services such as that.
I'm wondering, what are you doing to market yourselves now that you're competing in these exchanges?
It keeps coming back to, it will make it much easier for a consumer to compare plans because there's equivalency there across plans, but it keeps coming back to, it's, you know, it's more than just price. And so it's our job to get that message out to explain, you know, we're a local plan. Our employees are all, you know, local and they're in your community. They go to your schools and churches and stores and things like that. And so it's important to us to serve this community with a plan for our community.
We came out today to talk about, have you heard about Obamacare or health care reform?
Jeff Renderle is with the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District. He talks with parolees and former prison inmates about the Affordable Care Act during a recent expo in Champaign. Renderle and others at Public Health are getting people ready for new benefits under the health care law.
So how old are you right now?
56.
Okay, so you qualify for Medicaid.
And that's new for Johnny Smith of Champaign, who says he hasn't qualified for Medicaid before and never had health insurance. Smith served 7.5 years for residential burglary. If you had asked him before his arrest if he needed mental health care, he says he would have said no. But that changed after prison.
You go through quite a few things in prison, mentally, physically. There's so many issues going on inside of prison that you have to deal with on a daily basis.
Smith says getting health coverage will help him stay out of trouble.
If I could get back on track with my mental issues from prison abuse, I might have a chance in real life.
That is exactly what we're thinking about.
That's Gladys Taylor, the assistant director of the Illinois Department of Corrections. She says inmates are getting help signing up for coverage. With more people, like Johnny Smith, able to get care, she anticipates fewer people will wind up back behind bars.
We want them to be able to access their medical service providers immediately upon release. And hopefully that will. Our objective is to ensure that they don't return to custody because they're getting immediate care and treatment.
Taylor says the process of enrolling inmates in a health plan will begin at intake. Then, 3 to 6 months before their release, they'll be linked to a managed care organization and primary care physician. Inmates enrolled in a plan before incarceration will still be covered by that plan when they're released.
Hi, this is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. Coming up next, Lisa Brooks ponders her one big gardening failure of the year, garlic, and asks advice from a knowledgeable neighbor in this latest edition of In My Backyard.
The best garlic I've ever had was bought from my friend Karen years ago at the farmer's market in Urbana, Illinois. I didn't grow up with garlic in the kitchen. I didn't really understand until I was in my 20s that it actually grew in the ground, that its native form wasn't powdered and in a jar, and that it is to be fated and not feared. Last fall, Karen gave me a wonderful gift, a brown paper bag loaded with garlic, which she no longer sold at the market but continued to grow in her home garden an hour north of town. I'd been thinking for years that I would plant my own someday, but I was intimidated. Garlic was, I heard, finicky, and here I was suddenly entrusted with these gorgeous cloves of garlic from Karen. Great. What if I planted them and had garlic failure? It would be a terrible waste. "You can do whatever you want with these," she said. I thought for a couple of seconds about just taking them home and roasting them with a chicken, but I went home and cleared a garden bed instead. I pulled the spent summer vegetable plants and worked in some compost, and on a sunny and cool October day, I planted single cloves of garlic in neat little rows, and then I waited. Visions of mostly homegrown pesto danced in my head all winter long. It was not a success. Many cloves didn't come up, and what did was weak and spindly. The wild garlic that had somehow found its way into another part of my yard was more robust. I was really bummed. I knew I had done something wrong. I needed a garlic-growing pep talk before trying for 2014. I contacted Zach Grant, manager of the Sustainable Student Farm on the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign campus.
Gaston? Señor Gaston?
Salvador Casillas with the Mexican consulate calls out to a group of people in a hallway at the Urbana Civic Center who are waiting to get their passports. Some of them, like Aida Avila of Crystal Lake, are undocumented and anxiously waiting to get what they need so that they can apply for a driver's license later this year through the Secretary of State's office.
This is going to be a real and important help to us. Because we're immigrants, traffic tickets can get really expensive, and sometimes we don't make enough to pay them.
Avila says she needs a license so that she can get to work. Lucia Maldonado, who organized the consulate's visit to Urbana, says the agency only sees people by appointment and that many of the 1,200 people who were supposed to show up haven't.
And a lot of people here locally from Champaign-Urbana were not able to get appointments. So we have people who keep calling asking if there is an appointments available, and we don't have any appointments.
Undocumented immigrants in Illinois can begin scheduling appointments in November with the Secretary of State's office so that they can take the driver's license test. But no date has been set for when those licenses will be available. I'm Sean Powers, Illinois Public Media. Aaron Smith of Bloomington Normal and his partner Toshi have been together for nearly 20 years. We've changed Toshi's name to protect his identity. Toshi overstayed his visa. He's originally from Japan and lived legally in the U.S. for many years. But in 2010, he had to go back to Japan after his visa wasn't renewed. And so he did that for 6 months.
What did you miss most about him being away?
I don't know. It's just, you know, part of me, you can't, like, live without it. It just... air, water, you name it. It's just part of you. You need it.
Toshi just said it very well right now. How do you define and describe your love for a person? I mean, it's right that he's here and that we're together, and it's wrong when he's not.
That was 3 years ago. I interviewed Aaron and Toshi shortly after Toshi came back to the U.S. for what was supposed to be a temporary visit. After that interview, the two decided that Toshi would stay after his visa expired. Last fall, they got married in Iowa, anxiously waiting for the federal government to recognize their marriage. Then in June, this happened.
Today, a historic moment when it comes to the rights of millions of Americans. The Supreme Court said yes. Yes to same-sex marriage this morning, repealing...
We were both very excited because we knew that it was going to happen that day. Toshi was up from 5 o'clock in the morning, and he said the dogs woke him up, but I think he was probably kind of excited to find out.
That uncertainty permeates... just so many things, you know. I was driving a car, and then as always, if I got busted, what could happen? Day in, day out, you have to think about it. So now it's gone.
Shortly after the DOMA ruling, the federal government said same-sex couples could be eligible for green cards through their spouses. Toshi is now waiting for his green card. And there's nothing stopping immigration officials from picking him up. But his immigration attorney, Michael Jarecki, says he's not likely to get deported since he has no criminal record and a pending green card application.
After Nelson Mandela was released from a South African prison in 1990, WILL spoke with his eldest daughter. Maki Mandela said at the time that she felt her father's role in ending apartheid had been overblown by the media. No single man or political movement, she said, can dismantle apartheid alone.
Apartheid with all its tentacles is still in place in South Africa. The ANC, together with the Pan-African National Congress and the UDF and the Black Conscious Movement and the church movements and the trade union movements and the women's organizations and even the homeland leaders, have to come together to find a solution. No negotiation can occur and create a positive environment for change in South Africa if any of these movements or organizations is ignored.
Nelson Mandela's daughter, Maki, from an interview here in Urbana in 1990. Illinoisans are also mourning the death of Nelson Mandela today. U.S. Senator Dick Durbin says he feels honored to have met Mandela. He says he had courage and commitment, coupled with, quote, a caring and forgiving heart. Mayor Rahm Emanuel in Chicago says Mandela's message of peace and hope resonates with Chicagoans 2 decades after the late South African president visited that city. Emanuel also recalled visiting South Africa on his honeymoon in 1994, just after Mandela had become president. U.S. Representative Bobby Rush remembered helping to organize Mandela's visit to Chicago and recalled visiting Mandela in South Africa. Tonight at 7 o'clock on AM 580, we'll bring you NPR's one-hour special on Nelson Mandela that's hosted by Jennifer Ludden. Again, that's coming up at 7 o'clock tonight on AM 580.